Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Heather Bosch. The search continues in the Potomac River for bodies after an American Airlines jet and an Army helicopter collided midair Wednesday. Washington, D.C. Fire Chief John Donnelly.
During our salvage surveys in preparation to lift the aircraft, additional remains were located and removed from the river and taken to the medical examiner's office.
55 of 67 bodies have been recovered. An update on the number of known injuries in the crash of a medical plane in Philadelphia. Mayor Cheryl Parker.
That number has now increased to 22. Five of the victims remain hospitalized currently, and three of them are in critical condition.
All six people on board the plane and one person on the ground died in Friday night's crash. Even without a permanent FBI director confirmed, the Trump administration has forced out division heads. Retired FBI Assistant Director Frank Figluzzi tells CBS's Face the Nation he's concerned there's also talk of firing agents involved in Trump-related investigations.
With regard to dismissing hundreds or thousands of special agents in the field who have touched January 6 cases or Trump-related cases, this makes America less safe.
President Trump ordered tariffs take effect on Mexican, Canadian, and Chinese imports effective Tuesday. Mark Hamrick with Bankrate.com says this could lead to higher prices.
It isn't just that we face the risk of inflation. It is also that we face the risk of businesses being negatively impacted because consumers have already demonstrated there is only so much they can pay.
Canada has already responded with a 25% tariff on products it imports from the U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio is in Panama at a time when President Trump is demanding the Panama Canal be returned to U.S. control. He claims there is a Chinese presence at the canal. CBS's Ed O'Keefe.
9,000 people work for the canal, virtually all of them Panamanians. When ships pass through it, they have to be piloted by Panamanians. And those we spoke to essentially laugh at the idea the Chinese could ever take control.
The 67th Grammy Awards are airing tonight on CBS. CBS's Deborah Rodriguez says Beyonce leads the nominations with 11.
Question is, will she finally take Album of the Year for Cowboy Carter? She's nominated for the fifth time, but she's never won.
Beyonce is the most nominated artist in the award show's history with 99 total nominations across her career. After Beyonce, it's a tied race among several artists. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Central Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, snow is likely, a few inches of accumulation possible by midday tomorrow. We'll see a high near 28 on your Monday, a low of 5 tomorrow night. For Tuesday, mostly cloudy with a high near 18. Another shot of snow possible Wednesday, mid-20s.
Right now, 35.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome, everyone, to WFHR's Director's Cut. We are here to have some fun today and get into session number 53. Your host and program director here is James J. Maloff, with my partner and our head of production, Seth Habhager.
Well, good evening, everyone. Thanks for joining us once again. And we are continuing our Civic Series tonight.
Yeah, with this show, we continue not only the Civic Series, but give you an idea of a mind that I wanted to get our different Civic Media family members out there and get you to get to know them a little bit better. So with that, we ask the best listeners in radio to welcome to the WFHR stage, Civic Media's own, the incredibly talented anchor host. You hear her do Slice of Wisconsin segments during our breaks, a true Renaissance woman and one of the greatest voices in radio. Just my opinion. Our friend Terry Barr joins us. Terry, how are you?
Wow, you guys, now I have to live up to all of that.
Yeah.
My goodness,
set the bar high, too.
Yeah,
we
no
set the bar high
at all.
No kidding, no kidding. It's great to be here with you and all of your wonderful listeners today.
We get to hear this voice for the next half an hour, Seth. That's awesome. Terry, I appreciate you taking the time, joining us and everything. And one of the ways I like to start things off is asking people their origin story. Can you tell us a little bit about where you're from and your early days?
I would love to. You know, as a kid, I grew up on a dairy farm just outside of Green Bay. And I'm so proud to say that I am a daughter of a former dairy farmer. I think that's such an important thing in Wisconsin, and it's something to be proud of. The good thing about growing up on a dairy farm, both of my parents were very, very active in our community and in the state, things like Farm Bureau and other activities that would take them all over the country. So seeing them do that made me want to do that, and I just am forever grateful that my parents said, and especially to a girl on a dairy farm, that I could be or do whatever I wanted. And what I wanted to do since I was a little kid was go into radio and TV.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So my very first radio job was when I was still in high school, and I worked at a little Shawano, Wisconsin radio station. It was an AM at the time. And before we knew what news talk was, that's what the Shawano radio station was.
Cool.
So that's kind of where this all began.
Wow.
Nice.
That is really, really interesting. When it comes to your parents in those early days and growing up on a dairy farm, certainly with the early hours and the work ethic that it has to be to do something like that, did you feel you organically took in some of that work ethic and applied that to whatever the all many things that you have done in your life?
Oh, absolutely. I remember the call to, why haven't you fed the calves yet? But it was also, get that job done, and then you can go do all these other things you want to do. And I was so lucky, you know. And you sometimes you think kids on a dairy farm, that's all they do. But again, my parents were so supportive of myself and my two brothers. We were all in sports. We were all in band. We were all, you know, I was a cheerleader. We all did extracurricular activities. And we all did okay in school. But I think, as you said, it goes back to that whole idea of having to be responsible. By the time you can walk, you're in the barn or you're somewhere helping with all the things that your parents have to do.
You know, and Terry, one of the things, too, that I think stands out with this, and this happens, I would say, with almost every guest we've had on this show or some of the other shows we do around here, when I ask people that origin question, it so often comes back to the parents being supportive. I like to say encouragement, support, cost nothing, can mean everything. And while for myself growing up, I didn't have hardly anything, I always had my mom and dad. And while I had an athlete for a father and a man who just loves and eats and breathes and leaves, loves sports and wanted his son to be an athlete and all these things, I'm 7 years old and I tell him I want to be an actor. And the first thing he says to me is, Jimmy, okay, but be the best. You want to do it, that's fine, but be the best at it. And has supported me ever since. And I can't imagine that it was necessarily easy for his 7-year-old to come up to him and say, I'd rather play a boxer than be a boxer. This is not our stories. Seth's are so very similar when it comes to where we all come from different areas and walks of life. This similarity continues where parents being supportive of their kids. It's a nice note to all moms and dads out there and all you parents. That's one thing that never gets out of style.
That's right.
And still works. When it came to getting into radio, you mentioned that early job. How did that happen?
I just stopped in and said, do you need somebody to come and help you this summer?
Wow.
You know, small local radio, that's where it was at. And I think because this radio station, very much like all of you, are so involved in the community, and I saw that, and I really took that to heart at a young age. Watching my parents as well be involved and seeing the radio station involved. And I thought, you know, if this is something I want to do, I'm just going to ask if they need some help during the summertime and see what happens. And they said yes. And that's when I found my love for not just being in radio, but I found my love for news and wanting to make a difference in that aspect.
When it comes to whether it's radio or any other walks of life, who do you consider some of your early or some of your bigger influences?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. Probably for me, it goes back to somebody like a Joan London.
Mm.
And, of course, wow. Jane Pauley is still on CBS yeah. Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, just the way these women would tell stories, I probably did take a page out of their books because I wanted to be a storyteller, but I wanted it, again, to make it mean something to the listeners. Maybe it's fun, maybe it's serious, but at the end you hope you made a difference with it, whether you made them laugh or cry or make them want to step out and help somebody else.
Joan London doesn't get enough flowers. She was so good at that job.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And a great talker, great interviewer, great way. Especially,
yes.
remember her a lot doing Good Morning America and some of the work there. It's great names to bring up. One name that I went back when I first started doing Midday Magazine, and I'm not a traditional interviewer and wanted to really learn and try to get better at the craft in a quick amount of time. I went back and listened to a couple of people that I really enjoy and I've been around, but I went down a rabbit hole on Barbara Walters. And watched a lot of her interviews, and I was watching them just basically to see how she constructed her questions and stuff. But what I found watching her was learning, man, you can ask the simplest question, but the great questions that she would have were always these follow-up questions.
Mm-hmm.
And how important that is. And some of these great artists, I consider them, at interviewing really helped shape so many of us going forward and how we would do this game and how we would do these. That's really cool to hear those names. So we don't get to hear those names nearly enough. Those are great influences. Those are great ones.
Yeah, and everybody always said, listen, stop and listen. Don't, you know, if you have questions written down, that's great. Maybe even a simple outline. But don't keep looking at your outline and your questions so you're ready for the next one. Look at the person and listen to that person and let it breathe, because sometimes you get the best stuff when you're talking to someone and the other person stops talking. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those moments, and there have been some of those where I just sat there and looked at the other person, and they just looked at me and then started saying all the things that I was wishing they would say. All of a sudden, there it was, because right. I didn't open my mouth again so quickly.
Very nice.
It's one of the coolest things to happen in the interview.
Yeah.
It's such great points. We're speaking with Terry Barr, Civic Media's own. And Terry, I mentioned earlier that the Slice of Wisconsin segments, a lot of people have heard and really enjoy. I've heard many good things from our listeners about that over the last couple of years. You do other things here at Civic Media as well. We only have a half an hour, just keep in mind. But can we tell the audience some of the other jobs and the other things that you do here, not only at Civic, but just in general?
Oh, my goodness. I also write a lot for the website. Mm. So if people are looking for information, if they're looking for some fun stories, you'll also find those Slice of Wisconsin stories on the Civic Media website, which is civicmedia.us. I write commercials. I write promotions. I feel like I am just a person, and I feel very, very fortunate for this, that if somebody can't get it done or needs some assistance or is just like, here, you do this,
mm-hmm.
that somebody can lean on me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it comes from, after I started in TV, I went to college for radio, TV, film, and I minored in journalism and political science. But I think once I moved from radio to TV, I found that the ability to wear a lot of different hats took you a lot of places.
That's true.
And I think that has always been a really good thing to remember, that it is a plus. It's not a minus if you can wear lots of hats.
I want to say real quick that for those of everyone there that was there when we did the switch over 2 years ago, August 1st, when after Civic Media purchased WFHR, one of the first voices you heard was probably Terry Barrs, because she did the initial run of the new promos that we were doing. You're listening to WFHR, locally grown radio and everything. So Terry has been here since the very beginning of our tenure with mm-hmm. Civic Media, which means, you know, for those who know, there's been, you know, quite a bit of turnover. It's a new company, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. But Terry's been here since the beginning, so it's nice to have that continuity. Yeah.
That's a great note.
Well, thank you, and it has been such a pleasure to work with all of you. Wisconsin Rapids and the area, very, very fortunate to have people like you in the community.
Appreciate you,
thank
Terry.
You.
We can't handle compliments around here, so we're just going to move on. One of the things that you noted, I think, that is really cool about not only what you do, but what we do here at Civic Media, and actually it goes back to something I told Seth day one when he first started interning with us. You know, you're good at this, get good at this too, and this too, and this too, and make it so you're so valuable.
Indispensable.
Yeah, indispensable,
right?
And all that. And
yeah.
It's a great note to, I think, younger people out there, whether they're getting into this medium or any medium, that make yourself invaluable. You know, that's one of the greatest things you can do. And wearing a lot of hats can also keep the job to be very fresh and interesting.
Exactly.
There's a lot of advantages to it. Speaking of advantages to things, Terry, my daughter is different, but at the same time, very similar to you, and just very early in her stages. She's 27. She is a freelance creative. She really is out there doing many different things and doesn't really have necessarily an overall boss. She has a little more freedom to her career with that, but also some insecurity with some things and some fears with some things. For you, do you for one, still consider yourself and are still a freelance creative? Because I don't want to just assign that to you, but it does seem like you are. And how have you enjoyed that? What are the pluses and the negatives to that? Or just the pluses, if you want.
Yeah, there's definitely pluses. It allows me to do some of the other things that I really do enjoy that maybe I don't do at Civic Media. I love social media, and I do work with a couple musicians and help them create their social media. And again, because I'm working with musicians, I'm working with other creatives, we're having fun with that. We do videos, and we do, you know, other kinds of non-traditional posting, where if I did that with Civic Media, we would be, you know, a little more on the news politics side. So I like getting away and doing the creative things. Mm-hmm. I write for other people. I can even ghostwrite. I've done some ghostwriting as a speech writer or a commentary or an editorial. And nobody knew I did it, but, you know, because your name isn't on it.
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
if you can step up and do those kinds of things, I would certainly encourage your daughter to do that. And it does. I mean, there can be days where you kind of go, oh, what am I doing? But I have had fewer of those kinds of days than glorious days where you just feel like, yep, I found my spot and this just feels really good.
You mentioned acting. Our ears perked up at that, of course, because you were talking to two fellow actors right here. Have you gotten to do anything recently? Do you have anything coming up?
Wow, that's an interesting question. Yes, recently I was in a zombie comedy movie.
Yeah. I may have cheated on this one, Terry. I may have looked at your social media. I may have, yeah.
Oh, you stinker.
Yeah.
Oddly, I said, was I typecast? Because I played a news reporter.
Play what you know, right?
Right. Oh, I got to be the news reporter at the toward the end of the film that lets everybody know that basically everything will be okay. So that was really fun.
Cool.
And I play piano, and all of a sudden I am going to be playing a piano teacher in another local film that is just getting underway. So it's fun when you can connect some of these dots, but with the right people too, so you feel like you're doing something that really is worth your time.
It's so cool to hear.
Yeah.
And good on you for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it also means that we have to work together. I have to work with you. We have to act together.
Oh,
sometimes
boy.
We have to.
We would have so much fun.
Yes, it would be a blast. We have a lot of fun here at Civic Media. We enjoy our jobs. We love what we get to do. Up and down the state, you'll find a Civic Media radio station. We also take these jobs on knowing that there is a little more to the job than your normal radio gig or certainly talk or music where it goes. When it comes to what it means to you to work for Civic Media, to work with Civic Media, I should say, Terry, what does it mean to you?
When I've had people ask, what is Civic Media? And then you tell them it's a statewide network of local radio stations, and they still kind of give you a puzzled look. I will then often say, it's taking me back to why I got into radio or TV in the beginning.
Mm.
I love to talk about how stations up north that maybe had been turned off, or hadn't been considered local in a really long time. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, these stations are back on their main street. They're back on the air. They're back getting into the community. And I just feel that in my heart, that that is something so important. Everybody wants to feel like they're part of something, but if you don't have anyone that is talking to you about it or representing you for it, it just doesn't feel right. So mm-hmm. while I was at the very beginning of Civic Media and I'm watching Sage Weil, our owner, purchasing these stations all over the state and then opening the doors again, I sat back many days and just applauded him because mm-hmm. it feels right. It feels like this is what radio and local TV, this is what it's supposed to be. Don't you think so?
Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
Well said.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are both on board for that, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. We went through the ringer of having a couple of different owners in a very short amount of time.
Right.
And as yeah. somebody who's been doing this a long time myself, you know, I've been in radio for 20 some years and I've had at least 8 to 9 different ownership changes I've been a part of and everything. You get a little bit of PTSD with this stuff of they yeah. say one thing, but they don't do it necessarily. We were very fortunate with Heart of Wisconsin Media that owned us beforehand. Marcus was not your typical owner, didn't mm-hmm. come from a radio background. And really, when he said something, he meant it. Whether he could pull it off or not, he was going to try.
Right.
I had a lot of great intentions and great heart, and we wouldn't be where we are without him. When Civic took over, I was very on the fence because I didn't know who this company was. I didn't know anything about them. Nobody did. And I certainly did my homework on Sage and immediately was very intrigued by him because of his background, and he's not coming from mm-hmm. a radio background either. And then you meet him. And it's hard not to immediately not only get engaged, but get on board with what he's trying to do. And you, I don't know for you guys, but for me, when I came away from the first meeting, as much as the last time mm-hmm. I talked to him just a couple of days ago, I come away from talking to him, like being reminded that he doesn't have to do any of this. Like he could have sat back, like, look, right. you know, there's another universe, parallel universe, where he's sitting on a beach in Hawaii or something like
right.
that. Like, I mean, he's doing this and he's investing in our state and our people because this is what it means to him. And if that's what it means to him, who am I or anybody else here to not get on board? And it's contagious. It really does get in your system, especially all of us. There ain't anybody in radio that's doing this to be the next Rockefeller. Well, is that an old reference?
I know.
To need the next Jobs. How about that?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
We do this yeah. because certainly we want to keep the lights on, but also this is a passion. We love what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And I want to yeah. really quick piggyback, and I wonder if you guys agree with me on this. Sage is not one of those slick, you know, guys, hey, you know, I'm going to do this yeah. and this.
Thank goodness.
I know. Yeah. He comes back. He comes across as very sincere and very natural. Yeah. That's not a lot you get in radio. My goodness, James, I'm sure yes. both of you, actually, yeah. who've both been in radio a lot longer than I have, can talk about those kind of like slicksters, you know, that say, uh-huh. like James was saying, say one thing, do another behind your back, and then you're like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
We have not right, had that right. with Sage. So,
yeah, I totally agree. And I can tell you, and please don't laugh, but sometimes I think about my past, and I don't regret anything about what I've done on my trail to get to where I am now, because that all tells a story. But I worked at 7 different TV stations. Ooh. And yeah, during the TV time, I always tried to keep a foot in radio. So wherever I was working or living, there was still something about radio that kept pulling me over and pulling me over. And in the end, I'm glad I did that, because that way I kept up with the changes. And yeah, you get to know the people you're talking about that are slick that maybe you don't want to work with. In the
exactly,
unit.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you learn a lot along the path, that is for sure. And you guys and Sage and everyone at Civic Media, I just feel so fortunate to work with all of you.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. This is a radio, man. That's radio. It's not just that. As we're getting ready to wrap up here, I did have just a couple more questions. I have not done a good job as an interviewer really covering your career. In my defense, it's gigantic, and you have accomplished so much. But you have gotten a chance, and I've gone, I mentioned Barbara Walter, some interviewers I've gone back and listened to. You are one of those people, Terry. I've gone and listened to some of your past interviews that I could find. I really appreciate it's so cool to hear that you were interested in being a storyteller, because I feel like as an interviewer you're even able to do that. Who are some of the, you know, your favorite moments, your favorite interviews that you have had over the years?
Oh my goodness. One that it still stands out because growing up a Green Bay Packers fan and then working in television in Green Bay back in the 90s when the Packers finally got back to the Super Bowl. Mm. And we, you know, we had just become the local Fox TV station, and everybody was like, what is a Fox TV station? Mm-hmm. There wasn't even, we didn't have a national Fox brand then.
Wow. It was,
yeah. So we were doing hours and hours and hours of news and then just some other programs, but we had the Packers, and that was huge. And we traveled with them. We covered every game. We did hours before the game, hours after the game, interviewed anybody and everybody we could grab. And it often included the players after the game. And I have to say those were some of the best days because in the end, the Nationals were not around. The ESPNs were not coming around. It was all, once again, oops, you have to depend on the local folks.
Yeah,
and it
nice.
Was wonderful. Yeah,
so cool.
It was wonderful. Yeah.
Terry, we appreciate the time so very much. This has been a blast. I do think that you did too good. You're going to have to come back. We're going to have to do a part two of these because there's just so much else I want to get into and so many other more questions. But we do have one final question for you, and it may be the most tough one, the hardball question.
It's always the hardest.
If you could have coffee with any historical figure, who and why?
Oh, wow.
I told you. I tried to warn
Same
you.
Same reaction yeah, we always get.
It's a tough one. It's a tough
one. Yeah. Oh, see, I should have, and I know we never give questions ahead of time, but I should have said, what questions are you going to ask?
Yes.
I know we don't like to do that. Is it fair if I say I want to sit down with all of the members of the band KISS?
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
That's fine.
That is there is no wrong answer, but you may have come up with the perfect one. That's a great answer. Oh, that's a fun
Thank
answer.
You.
That's a fun,
Thank
fun
you.
Answer. I saw
I have enjoyed them since I was a little kid. Got to go to the final concert in New York City at Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
And it's just something I'll never forget. You know, the music just takes you places and makes you remember things, and there's just something about that. I would love to say some news figures, but I'm going to stick with the fun side of
this. Let's go. Absolutely.
Yeah. I got to see, my first real big concert or true concert was seeing KISS in 96, 97 over at the Kohl Center. And I went into it. I went because one of my best friends is a diehard KISS fan, has a KISS Army tattoo, dresses up as Gene Simmons every year for Halloween, a big KISS guy.
Awesome.
Went to go with him, so he didn't have to go by himself and all this. And I thought it'd be kind of cool as an entertainer, as an actor. I like dissecting this stuff. If I wasn't a big KISS guy beforehand, I was after. I don't know how you can't be. They are a perfect balance of a theater, of music, of a circus.
Mm-hmm.
It is so amazing. And how they've been doing it for as long as they have and had done, I should say, is so impressive. Great choices.
Right. Excellent.
Terry,
you described it perfect.
There you go.
It was perfectly described. Yes.
A follow-up question to that one. If you were a member of KISS, do you have an animal you would be? Do you have makeup or anything you'd be? They got a couple animals already covered.
Oh my God.
That one's, I think that's too hard, man.
It's too tough.
That's too tough. That's across the board.
I would say cat, but the cat man's already
Yeah, yeah Peter, done. Peter Chris. Yeah, there. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't a fair question. Yeah. It wasn't a fair question. Was it?
It was a fun one, though.
You're the best, Terry. We appreciate you so much. We're looking forward to hearing your voice on our station, going forward more and more. And again, you're going to have to come back because this was a lot of fun.
This was wonderful, and thank you so much for asking me, and thank you to all the listeners for listening.
Oh, and don't forget to catch her on MaxSync Radio as well on Saturdays, because Terry's there as well. I almost forgot to mention that. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you for that mention. Yeah, we are live from 6 to 10, and then we just play great music from 10 to midnight. But we have a live band in studio at 9 o'clock every Saturday night.
Yes.
I'm so jealous of that. I love that. You got to keep that alive. Keep that in radio. Great work, Terry. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk again real soon.
Okay, thank you.
We'll be back with more Director's Cut here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Hey there, folks. It's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute and a tip about saving money when you are renting a car. So you know how you get to the rental counter and then they ask you if you want to prepay for gas so you don't have to bring the car back full? Well, I used to get sweaty in those moments as I wasn't sure what the right money choice was. prepaying for gas at the rental counter? Not worth it. First off, rental companies often charge more per gallon on the prepay than local gas stations do at the pump. And even if they're about equal, fees or taxes on your rental can tip the scales against prepaying. And you'd have to return that car completely empty to get the full value of buying prepaid gas. Otherwise, you're just buying gas for Avis and Budget or whoever. Quick note, make sure you have time to refill the tank before you return the rental. If you don't prepay and you don't fill up, they are going to charge you like they have refilled that car with liquid gold. For more tips, head to workmoney.org. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back, everybody, to WFHR's Director's Playhouse. I have your host, James J. Maloff, here. I'm joined by Colin Mockery and Asad McKee from Hitprov, coming to the Grand Theater in Wausau this Saturday, 7:30. So excited about this show, you guys. Want to dive right into the details of it with you and get into some just Q&A with the show itself. First off, before we get into the details of it, how did this come together? This is two worlds that you wouldn't normally see together, but here we are. How did this happen? How did this come to be?
Believe it or not, I reached out to Colin through his website with the idea of merging hypnosis and improv together. Jeff Andrews, Colin's longtime manager, picked up the email. We ended up meeting, we had a conversation, and then we threw it up on the main stage of the Second City after their main stage show. We didn't know if it was going to work. We just decided to give it a shot where I would hypnotize some volunteers and then Colin would improvise with them. And lo and behold, it was a hit, and we ended up now touring the show 150 cities across North America, 6 months off Broadway, 6 months at Harrah's Casino, and it's been a real pleasure to be able to watch the show truly blossom. It's taken on a life of its own. We've had 12 improvisers in performing when Colin's unavailable to perform. We've had Mindy Sterling from the Austin Powers franchise. We've had Jonathan Mangum from Let's Make a Deal. We've had Jeff Hiller from Somebody Somewhere. The list goes on and on. So it's been really exciting to watch the show blossom in that manner.
That's great to hear, Asad. Colin, for you, when this first got brought to you, what were your thoughts? What did you think of this when you first heard it?
I thought it was ridiculous. I thought, how can this work? And then I said, yes. That was three-step program I used in my career. It came at a time when, I've been doing this for a long time, and one of the fears I had and still have is getting content in what I do and then not challenging myself and making things safe. And I thought, you know what, this cannot be more out of my comfort zone. And working with people I've never met who are in a hypnotic trance and not knowing, truly not knowing what's going to happen. So that kind of made it exciting. And, you know, when Asad and I walked on stage that first time, we really had no idea if it was going to work, like absolutely none. And that was a very exciting feeling.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And one of the things, and I think you touched on this a little bit before, you guys understand as performers, when you don't have a script, when you're out there without a net, the excitement of that and how it almost feels like, well, you don't know what you're going to say. You know, you're on an inside joke with your fellow creators that the audience isn't in on, that they're going to be. That you're going to let them in on, breaking the fourth wall to another degree in some ways. And then to incorporate this part of it, that just is such a cool and unique idea. I forget the name as I'm trying to come up with it, of course, but I think the amazing Jonathan, I think he combined some of these things at one point a little bit, but there hasn't been anything like this completely before. So can we get into the details of what the show is? What people can expect with the show?
Sure. So I'm the master hypnotist on the show. I bring up 20 volunteers. I hypnotize them, whittle it down to the best subjects. Then Colin Mockery from Whose Line Is It Anyway improvises with the people on stage while they're under hypnosis. The show is fast-paced. It's action-packed. And above all else, hilarious because we got Colin from Whose Line in improvising with some random volunteers from the audience while hypnotized.
That I feel like is a perfect description, and yet only scratches the surface. Because I've watched some of the videos, and I've done my homework on you guys. You really do give a unique show. You really do give. There is no reruns in something like this. Every show is going to be so vastly unique and different, especially when you're traveling all around the country. I can only imagine the different things that come up in different parts of the world and different parts of America here and all that. That's got to make a real fun part of this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what I love is every show is an opening and closing. It's that audience are the only people who's ever going to see the show. And hopefully, I mean, obviously the main point of the show is entertainment, and it's funny and it's fun. But I hope people also realize a lot of people come into the show with misconceptions as to what hypnosis is. And I thought I could probably talk to that better. But, you know, we're not changing these people's personalities. Assad gets rid of that part of their psyche that stops them from doing something, that says you can't do this or you're going to make a fool of yourself. That's gone, and they end up being pure improvisers. And every night, it just, as I watch him put people under from offstage, I go, I don't know how this is working. It's probably best not to even think about it. Just go out there. But it's fascinating.
Do you think that to that point, and I'll ask you both your answers on this. I'll start with you, Assad. Do you think, or rather find people to be more inclined to try improv this way because they're hypnotized, kind of taking their hands off the wheel and letting somebody else take the wheel?
Yeah, so the part of the brain that deals with self-reflection becomes disconnected when somebody's hypnotized. So they no longer reflect on their behavior. They just carry out my suggestions without hesitation and without question, which makes for really good improv. First-time improvisers, as you know, James, they'll hesitate. They'll look nervous. They'll use filler words. None of that happens when people are hypnotized. The good subjects, they will just immediately jump into the scene. They'll be fully committed. And it's like the audience isn't really there. They're just so focused on Colin and I that they give just these incredible performances.
Hmm. Colin, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. We every night we find a superstar, someone who, for whatever reason, just becomes like a great improviser, lots of funny lines. And one night we had this amazing young woman, and afterwards I was talking to her, and she said, you know, I have crippling social anxiety. I have no idea why I volunteered. That was the best hour of my life. I've never felt so in charge of myself. I never felt so relaxed. So she was planning to go out and take improv classes, find an improv troupe. And I thought, oh, okay, you know, that is not something we thought about, obviously, when we're coming up with the show. But the fact is, it sort of opened this woman to the possibility of improvising. I thought that was really cool.
That is so cool. It's one of the things that I think you find, for me, I found, I got into comedy and started doing things at Second City because like you, I watched the show when I was a little kid and grew up on it. But I, as an actor, I was able to really find my tools in drama and you know, action and all these different things, but I was never good at comedy. I think too much. And I don't think I was born with a funny bone. I'm pretty sure I wasn't. Second City really helped me find that. But the biggest thing that I think they opened up to me was so many people taking classes at Second City or other like the Groundlings or other places. I had classes with attorneys. I had classes with people that work in public service that just wanted to feel more comfortable being in the public eye or talking to people. And part of the point of this show and the mission of this show is to certainly promote and support artists supporting artists. But the other part of it is encouraging young artists and showing them the path and showing them ways that they can do this from other people who have already established it. It's part of the reason why I asked those horrible questions for you guys to put up with. And all of this is to give people an idea of this can be done and so many people can do it. And I think that this show that you guys are doing just it almost cuts out the middleman. You're just putting people up there right away and showing you, see, you can do this too.
Yeah, I think it opens up the thing about the hypnotism. It just opens up all these possibilities for you.
Yeah.
And to me, if you're watching a show that combines hypnosis and improv, you can pretty much do anything. Anything is possible. At one point, I'm sure someone thought, well, this will never work. And it does. There's always going to be the naysayers. Sometimes the biggest naysayer is yourself. And once you get past that, you know, just go for it. I always tell people, you know, take improv classes, even if you're not going to be an improviser. And by the way, I highly advise you not to. But it's a great life skill. It's great to be able to, you know, walk into situations without any prejudgment and just play it as it lays and see what happens. It really is a great life tool. And I always recommend take an improv class. It certainly can't hurt you.
Is there anything about the show that from any of the touring you guys have done and the success you've had with this already that really stands out to you? I mentioned a little bit of some of the publications and pieces that have been written about this. The out of the London Times, a celebration of the human imagination. That's such a great line. And it's I think it fits the show so well. Are there moments like that, or are there times in live shows that you guys remember that you're like, OK, this was fantastic?
I will speak about the New York Times reviewing us at the Asylum. We were, that's the Improv Asylum in New York City. We were about to perform off Broadway, and one of the New York Times critics, Jason Zineman, came in to watch the show. And I will tell you, I was so nervous before that show. And I was nervous after the interview, after the show, because I thought, you know, this is kind of make or break because it's the New York Times. And we ended up getting the front cover of the New York Times art section. And in it, you know, some of the quotes were, "It killed." And then the crowd erupted in laughter. So that really, for me, was a pinnacle for the show and for my career. And to be able to do that in New York, it just speaks volumes about the show. And, you know, I'm just so very happy to be a part of it all.
Hmm. Colin, similar for you?
I've been drunk for most of the tour, so I don't really remember. For me, it's just exciting to do something new. I'm doing what I love. I'm out there improvising, and it has that added layer of it's a different improv. I'm not working with people I know, so it's sort of making me hone in to what my improv skills are, listening and working with someone and knowing, okay, now I'm just going to sit back and see where they go, and now it's time for me to come in and sort of lead a little. So I think it's really sharpened me improv wise and kept me fresh, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, those are great notes, too. And I think it's always great when you see somebody who is so good at what they do and they continue to push themselves and want to be even better. And we can all learn from that no matter what jobs we do or what we do with our lives. Asad, I could not thank you enough for the time. I really enjoyed going down a rabbit hole of you and your career and getting to know a little bit more of you and that. Now I'm going to be a fan and follow your career the rest of wherever you go and whatever you do. Thank you so much for the time, man.
Oh, thanks so much, James.
Colin, I mentioned Robin Williams earlier. I think like a lot of people, Robin Williams is the greatest improv artist I've ever seen. Depending on which Who's Line episode I'm watching, it's either you or Ryan Stiles that is in the number two spot in there. It's two or three. You guys switch bases all the time in my head. I cannot tell you how great it is to talk with you and share this conversation and this time with you. Thank you so much for it.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice of you. Although you lost some points when you mentioned Styles.
I should have done that. I knew I messed up there. I knew it, but we'll fix that in post. We'll fix that. Guys, before I let you go, we have a question that we wrap up every show with. It's a bit of a tip of the hat to the Inside the Actors Studio and James Lipton in that. If you could have coffee with any historical figure, who and why? And I'll start with you, Asad.
Nelson Mandela.
Ooh.
Just read his book years ago. I can't. It's And it was just, it was so incredible. The human spirit, unbreakable, and the forgiveness. You know, he was just brutalized by the regime at the time, and he was just incredibly forgiving after his incarceration. And I thought to myself, you know, why hold a grudge on anybody? When Nelson Mandela was thrown into prison and was left there to rot, and he comes out and he figures out a way to work with these people that did that to him. I thought to myself, you know what, it'd be interesting to hear his insights and just sit there and talk to him.
Very well said. Great answer. Yeah. Colin, how about you?
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah, but, he took your answer, didn't he? He took your answer.
Yeah. Oh. I'm going to go with Bob Hope. As someone who went through every version of show business, he started in vaudeville. There's some silent movies. He did the talkies. He could sing. He could. There's a great scene on YouTube with him and Jimmy Cagney in a scene from Seven Little Boys where they do this incredible tap dance. And I think, yeah, that was the time where you had to do everything. And just to get sort of, I do feel he kind of stayed in a little too long, and that's one of my worries. So I would have said, I think I left had the coffee and say, when do you think you should have stopped doing this? Because I'm going to take your advice on that.
I really study MCs a lot. I think Bob Hope may have been the greatest MC we'll ever see. He was such a natural at it. And that's a great answer. It's fantastic. This has been a great conversation. Thank you both so very much. We're going to make sure you guys have a full house and a big crowd at the Grand Theater this Saturday, 7:30 for HipProv. You can get your tickets at GrandTheater.com, GrandTheater.com. And we'll be selling this show, talking about it on our morning shows and other shows as well. Guys, enjoy yourselves. Break a leg out there. Safe travels getting here. We'll see you soon. Thanks for the time.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks, James.
Thank you. Just a gigantic thank you to Asad Mekki and Colin Mockery for joining us today talking about HipProv. Fun time. Just want to take this time to remind the audience that not only does Director's Cut turned into Director's Playhouse with a bit of the revamp there, but this show has become more and more popular thanks to all of you out there. And this show is made up of you. So if you're an artist, if you're a creative, any type, we want to hear from you. Reach out to me, james.maloff@civicmedia.us. You can, of course, direct message us on our Facebook pages. Call up at our front desk at 715-424-1300. Any type of creative out there, musician, comedian, whoever you might be, we want to have you on the show. Again, thank you to the boys for joining us. Be sure to get your tickets at GrandTheater.com. That is GrandTheater.com. Get those tickets for HipProv coming this Saturday, the 25th at 7:30 to the Grand Theater right in Wausau, Wisconsin. We'll be back with another Director's Cut for you very soon right here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
CBS News Brief. 55 of 67 bodies have been recovered from the Potomac River after the collision of an Army helicopter and a passenger jetliner Wednesday near Washington, D.C. Fire Chief John Donnelly.
We have some work to do as the salvage operation goes on, and we will absolutely stay here and search until such point as we have everybody.
President Trump ordered tariffs on Chinese, Canadian, and Mexican imports take effect Tuesday. Gas Buddies Patrick DeHaan.
We import about 700,000 barrels a day of crude oil from Mexico. That's going into refineries generally in the Gulf Coast. There may be options to avoid those tariffs by simply finding other suppliers.
We also import fuel from Canada, which just ordered a 25% tariff on U.S. imports. American Israeli Keith Siegel is among the hostages released this weekend in an exchange with Hamas.
He is very positive. He's very excited to be back with his family.
CBS News Brief. I'm Heather Bosch.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Central Wisconsin weather. I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, snow is likely a few inches of accumulation possible by midday tomorrow. We'll see a high near 28 on your Monday, a low of 5 tomorrow night. For Tuesday, mostly cloudy with a high near 18. Another shot of snow possible Wednesday, mid-20s.
Right now, 35.
The Badgers.
Seeds Max fakes the three, takes the three, left side, yes sir.
Fleet.
Pivots, fades, flips, good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it, with the right hand, it counts and a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, streaming live on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Last April, federal cybersecurity agency CISA issued warnings to election officials on how to combat a Russian online scheme to mislead American voters in the 2024 election. CISA is now under attack by its own administration. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency Act was signed by President Donald Trump in 2018, with part of its mission to protect election systems. It played a vital role in hardening state and local computer systems prior to the 2024 election, supporting state election officials, and monitoring hacking and disinformation campaigns perpetrated by Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea. After the 2020 election, it refuted Trump's false claims that the 2020 election was manipulated. Trump fired its director, and CISA was targeted by Project 2025 for a dramatic overhaul, with some conservatives calling for the agency's elimination. Just before inauguration, President Biden issued an executive order requiring new CISA cybersecurity standards be implemented, but Trump immediately revoked it January 20th. CISA's highly qualified director, Jen Easterly, resigned on Inauguration Day. New Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, said in her confirmation hearing, CISA had strayed from its mission by monitoring disinformation. As governor of South Dakota, she refused federal funding to harden cyber systems, calling it wasteful spending. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back, everyone, to Director's Cut here at WFHR, 97.5 FM, 1320 AM. Seth and James here with you. And I want to say a big thank you to Terry Barr for joining us. That was awesome.
She's great. She's great. Could talk to her for a long, long time.
We actually have about 7 to 10 hours of extra interview footage that we just weren't able to use. We had to cut it down.
She got several episodes in the can.
Yeah. We could have talked to her that probably long, that's for sure. Yeah. But as we wanted to kind of wrap up the show here, we wanted to do that in a fun way. Mm-hmm. I do want to remind everybody that we will be continuing the Civic Series. After next week, we actually have an interview set up with our own Brittany Merlot. We're going to be talking with Brittany and getting to know her a little bit more. Other Civic Media family members will be joining us, and our own, because after this, we're going to be kicking off our local Civic Series here.
That's right.
We're going to talk to Melissa and Seth. We're going to talk to Laura and Tim, and we're going to talk to Pam and Chuck, and I cannot wait for all these interviews.
Man, that's all good, too. And James, of course, too, because we don't know enough about James.
Yeah, you never hear me talk about myself or anything, so God, how else will anybody know?
How else will we know?
I'm doing my homework, my back. I'm going to find some interesting facts about all these people. We're going to get to know them a little bit better, and most importantly, I will.
The most important thing.
But one of the things that we wanted to do with this wrapping up the show was coming. We get these topics that we just never get a chance to talk about.
Right.
That can be a lot of fun for us, the audience, and interesting. Mm-hmm. And MovieWeb.com put together a list of actors who have been in the most movies.
Okay.
And I've never really thought much about this. Mm-hmm. This was a topic that up until I got this article, and I got this article, being honest with the audience, almost a year ago. I've had this that I've been sitting on.
Oh, gosh.
That we just never had really the time to get into anything.
No time like the present.
But since then, I've thought more and more about this. And certainly there is, I think it's noteworthy to say that when it comes to actors, there is no 401k. There is no retirement plan for actors. So being able to get a big body of work doesn't just mean, oh, I'm a big actor. I've been in a lot of movies. It means I've had a paycheck all of this time. I've
doing
been able
my job.
To take care of my responsibilities, my family, all of this. Actors are different and are no different at the same time than any other blue collar worker or anybody out there trying to make it check to check, trying to live, trying to survive. And to see this list, I thought it was very noteworthy. Now, for me, in our generation, I should say, Seth, I don't think we have seen many people that have done what Samuel Jackson has done.
Oh, yeah.
You can honestly say that Samuel Jackson has been in a movie almost every month of our lifetime, or of our older adult lives, I should say, of our adult lives. And what I think is also really cool about this list, we're going to go through the list with you. We're going to give you the numbers. But as we're going through this list, I want you to note out there how many of these people are stars, but maybe not household names, and not the names you would think of necessarily.
Right, like the superstars, right? You know, the names above the marquee, as they used to say, not really a thing anymore. But, you know, the ones, the first on the poster kind of thing, yeah.
And so many of these people, if not all of these people, just doing my little back reading and stuff, all come from working class families. And have that work ethic in them. And I thought that was interesting. As noteworthy as you're not going to see Tom Cruise on this list. You're not going to see some of those big, big names. You will see some, but you're not going to see necessarily some of the names that are household names,
right.
But great, great legendary actors. Like at number 25, Clint Eastwood with 82.
Wow. 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 Did not know that.
I think a lot of people out there that are younger and may know only Clint Eastwood as the older man, mm-hmm. or the director, which
yeah,
is noteworthy.
Even that, yeah.
And even some younger people from the 80s and stuff may think of Dirty Harry and some of those. Mm-hmm. But Clint made his bones in spaghetti westerns, mm-hmm. and did a lot of those really early on. In fact, was typecast early on. Dirty Harry actually helped him break type.
That's right.
Which is fascinating, but also created a whole other type for him that he had to live up to.
Right. And I think part of why he went into directing was to try to get away from some of that stuff. Not that he didn't like Westerns, because he continued to make them, even like Unforgiven in the 90s and stuff like that. So, no, but that's remarkable.
I think
about that.
We don't have to do it with every actor, but I think another fun thing is your favorite role these actors have played.
Oh, yes.
That have played 82 roles. It's pretty hard.
which one do you really like?
But I have to go with my dad on this one, Fistful of Dollars, and that character he played in those three movies. Those are, right. Oh, man. The preacher, you know, some of these. He's had some great roles.
Absolutely.
In his career. Robert Duvall comes in at number 24 with 93 roles in his career.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
That's a shocker to me.
Yeah.
Because, of course, another well-known name, but wow, I didn't realize he'd been in that many.
I never thought of that.
Never thought of it.
I actually think of him as more of a select actor, and I would have gone into this conversation saying, oh, well, he's probably not on this list. Mm-hmm. So to see him at number 24 was interesting.
That's good to know. And it's nice to know as we go through this list that there are some bigger names, and they're still working a lot. Again, a lot of it's just because you got to live, man. Yeah. You got to keep working.
At number 22, a tie between Anthony Hopkins and Bette Davis at 99.
Oh, my gosh. Anthony Hopkins will get over 100, I'm guessing, by the time he's done.
Well, I brought up when this list came out.
That's true. That's right. Yeah.
Since then, he has moved ahead of Bette Davis.
Yeah, okay.
But he is still behind the great Christopher Plummer, who is at 21, with 119 roles.
Wow, that's a big jump.
Yeah.
From like just over 100 to 119. Christopher Plummer, man. Oh, man. You think of some of the roles, you know, Sound of Music, I think, is probably one of his bigger ones. I think of Star Trek VI. He played a Klingon in that one. Oh, man. Absolutely great. And some of the older roles he did when he was an older actor and everything. But, yeah. Yeah, boy, he can add a lot to a movie, Christopher Plummer. Oh, very good. Very good.
It's such a good team actor.
Yes.
Bringing out
ensemble,
the better.
Right, yeah.
At number 20, Ray Milland. 132 for Mr. Dial M for Murder.
Yes, that's probably one he's best known for. The one he won an Academy Award for was The Lost Weekend, where he plays an alcoholic. One of the first movies that really dealt with alcoholism in a big way, mm-hmm. about that kind of thing. And I believe, if I remember, I might be wrong on this. Like Billy Wilder directed that?
Yes.
I might be wrong on that, but...
I should double check, but I feel very confident about that. I'm pretty sure you're right about that. At number 19, a name that wasn't long ago you and I were highlighting, James Hong.
Oh, yes.
119 roles for Mr. Hong. Or 133. I'm so sorry. 133 for Mr. Hong.
Him.
One of the greater character actors. If not, if somebody wants to say the greatest character actor of all time, no argument here. No argument.
No bones about it. Boy, and if he is any, if you've ever seen him speak, he's like as like unglamorized as acting like anyone. Yeah. He's just like literally Mr. Go to work every day. You know, he's just like, yeah, that is my job. This is what I do. All right, let's do it.
So many great roles over the years, especially as he got a lot of work in the 80s, mm-hmm. and everything, and Big Trouble, Little China, and movies like that. Had played a villain so often in his career.
He has.
It's so cool to see, I would say almost his last like 10 roles have all been like grandfathers, mm-hmm. and like good guys, and it's really
That's
cool
nice
to see.
That's nice to see, yeah.
Yeah, he deserves it. It's such a great actor, mm-hmm. and maybe as hard as this is for me to say as a thespian, mm-hmm. maybe even a better person than an actor.
That's what it sounds like.
That's tough, because he's an amazing actor.
Very good.
One of my biggest influences, one of my favorite actors when I was a kid, Mr. Anthony Quinn, comes in at 18 with 145.
Oh, wow. Mm. Man. Of course, probably one of his signature roles, Zorba the Greek. That was probably his most iconic role. But again, he popped up in so many movies, man.
He was one of those guys that once he got a name, people wanted him in their movie.
Yep.
And because of his background, his heritage, a lot of this was very... And because he did not necessarily look, and this is from Mr. Quinn himself, not like your stereotypical Latino
movie star.
It also gave him versatility back then to not just play Latino roles.
Right, exactly.
Which not a lot of actors had. Mr. Hong as one of them that wasn't able to do that kind of thing. Anthony Quinn. Quinn, also one of the more like vibrant, energies, especially the older he got, the more you got to see the real Anthony Quinn, the real man.
And he was one of those guys that could lead a movie. He could be the lead role or he'd be a character in it. He had so versatile. He could do just about anything.
It's because of that I think Zorba is noteworthy, but his performance in Lawrence of Arabia is arguably his most noteworthy performance, in part because it's such a legendary movie and he's such a good compliment to that movie. I can't imagine a movie without him. I can't. I couldn't picture
once
anybody
that he
else.
Was in. Yeah, exactly.
Also at 17, Michael Caine with 147.
What can you say about Michael Caine?
I mean, we could turn a whole show into
one
Michael
of the
Caine.
Most brilliant, most versatile actors ever. He could do comedy. He could do action. He could do drama. The man could do anything. Anything he wanted.
One of my biggest influences. One of my favorite
and
people.
And he had a voice and an accent second to none. Loved to hear him talk.
Ernest Borgnine at number 16 with 148. A beautiful actor, wonderful human being.
And that's not counting the TV. McHale's Navy he was in as well. Look, think of some of the, Marty is the one he won the Oscar for, you know. Probably, I don't know anymore if it's his most famous role, but that's what he was known for. But playing From Here to Fatso in From Here to Eternity, a pivotal role.
Max Inc. on Civic Media, live in the lair with Kalen Cole.
Have you ever walked away from a karaoke performance thinking, that was a lot better than the original person.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know if I should admit that or not.
I think he's right. Because now we know there's a song.
Jimmy's talking on it now.
I know. Oh, you're going to get me in trouble, Jimmy.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at MaxIncRadio.com and listen live on Saturday nights, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Heather Bosch. Fans today booing the U.S. national anthem at the Toronto Raptors NBA game against the L.A. Clippers. This after President Trump ordered tariffs on Canadian, Mexican, and Chinese imports to take effect Tuesday. There is concern the Trump administration plans to fire FBI agents involved in investigating President Trump. CBS's Pat Milton.
FBI supervisors across the country received a questionnaire to distribute to certain agents in their field offices containing questions about the agents' work on January 6 Capitol riot cases. The agents must respond to the questionnaire by tomorrow afternoon.
55 of 67 bodies have been recovered from the Potomac River after Wednesday's mid-air collision between an Army helicopter and a passenger jet